Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of Responsive Design Weekly. My name is Justin Avery. I am your host. Yeah, host, sure. Host and curator of, what do I curate? Curate the Responsive Design Weekly newsletter, of course. That was weird. I'd forgotten everything I'd done. I've got a lot of things on the table and I'm moving them around, but it's okay. I'm on it. Welcome. This week, I wanted to, before we get into the two things that I wanted to talk about this week, I've got a couple of things to mention at the top of the show. One is thank you very much to the awesome MobX Conference, who have started sponsoring us. They sponsored us last year, and they're just back on again for another set of sponsorship as well. So I just put out two podcasts in a week. Fancy that. And they got in touch and said, we'd love to be part of it again. So huge big thanks to Jan at MobX. Now, I was really fortunate. I was able to go out to MobX last year and speak, and the conference was awesome. They had a whole bunch of really cool people. They had a guy talking about user onboarding. They had Brad Frost. They had Stephen Hay speaking there. They talked about responsive design in a corporate environment using like SAP systems. They had someone talking about how to use the iWatch check how many times you were getting up and having a drink of water, and it would notify you if you were dehydrated or if you hadn't been up to have enough drinks of water. They had things about car interfaces. It was really cool. It was really cool. Anyway, so they've got another conference coming up this year, the 2016. It's in Berlin, and it's on the 9th of September. Now, this is a really unusual request. Don't go and buy your tickets yet, okay? So you can go and check out everything at 2016.mobxcon.com, but don't go buy your tickets yet because Jan is sorting out a discount for the listeners and the subscribers of Responsive Design Weekly, so just hold off. If you're viewing this on the site, check the show notes because I might have dropped it in there. But for now, I haven't quite got that code. So hold off. They're sponsoring for a couple of weeks. So you'll have your chance to get your code. If not right now on the site, you can get it in next week's podcast as well. So they've got some cool people. Andy Budd, who is the co-founder of Clear Left, which is a UX and web design agency in Brighton from the UK, is going to speak there. They've got the design lead for mobile UX from Zing, the chief designer for global design at SAP. That's huge, and a ton of other people. But so that's coming up, and thank you very much for sponsoring the show as well. The other thing we've got I wanted to mention too is I'm going to do another podcast. So one off the side with a few friends of mine, and it's going to be more focused around, well, just the internet in general as well. We've got a couple of different opinions on things. I'm going to come from it from more of a front-endy thing. I've got a friend who's more of a marketer and how you can make money out of the internet, and always looks at that point of view. And then another friend who is all about the DevOps and back-end stuffs and how to scale things to quite significant sizes on the internet as well. He's got a lot of really good experience there. So we're going to start this tiny little podcast as well, and I'll mention that again next week once we've recorded a couple of episodes, which should be really fun as well. But this week, I was doing some reading, as I always do, for the newsletter, and I came across I hadn't heard of this before. You can turn your phones and your laptops into physical beacons. Now, I was first exposed is a weird word. I first came across physical beacons when I went to the Web Is conference in Cardiff, put on by Craig Lockwood and Amy Lockwood, and they had Scott Jensen talking about the physical web, and everyone in the front couple of rows got these physical web little key rings. And what they are is they're a low energy using Bluetooth emitter, and all it would emit is just a signal. And you could program it to emit a URL. So when you had the app on your phone, the physical web app, It would show you all of the different physical devices around you that were broadcasting URL, and you can click on it and you can go check it out. So that was kind of cool. Now, I had this weird usage. Because it was a Bluetooth emitter, it only emitted over a certain distance. It was like 14 meters or 10 meters or something. Anyway, Bluetooth, because it's low powered, it wasn't hugely strong. So you have to get fairly close to it. And because it was a key ring, I used to have it on my keys. And I'm really forgetful, and I just lose my keys a lot. So what I ended up doing is I would switch the physical web app on my iOS device, and I'd kind of walk around the perimeter of my house to make sure that the keys were actually in my house. So I could go from end to end, and I could kind of somewhat track it down to a reasonable area in the house, and then I'd go hunt for my keys. It was just a way to know that I hadn't lost them on the tube or on the walk, or left them at on the walk to or from work, or left them at work as well. But anyway, they're really cool. So the idea, like I said, is it just broadcasts a URL, so it's for discoverability of things. Now, from the article, it kind of said, well, you're not convinced this is the future. Well, think about this. So what if you were to give a presentation, and you could bring along the beacon that sent out a link to download the slides for your presentation? Right, that's pretty cool. Or if you owned a physical shop and you wanted customers to easily access a link to the mobile app, it says a mobile app in the thing, but I'm going to say to the progressive web app, because we'll get to that in a bit, for online ordering, so that people don't need to go to the shop front as well. They can just find that. Or if you wanted to push an agenda update to all your conference attendees as they came to the door. So as they walked in, they would find this link, they could click and they could download the updated agenda. So it's really quite cool. Scott Jensen talked about things like paying for parking meters. So you get close to a parking meter and you press the URL and you're able to pay online, or even vending machines. So the interaction you have, you just have a dumb vending machine almost. It has no controls to it, but it has this emitter. So when you get close to it, you can see the URL, you click on it, you buy the product. The notification goes back to the vending machine that you've bought the product, and then that product kicks out. So all of a sudden, we're taking away interface challenges we might have on devices that we have to produce many of. So we have to produce many, many vending machines when a lot of people have mobile phones in their hands. So they could use that as the interface to the vending machine. So we're really quite cool and really good ideas. So now you don't need this beacon anymore. You don't need it sitting on your keyring. Mine since ran out of batteries, but it lasted a few years, which is quite cool. You can get your mobile phone to do it, or you can get your laptop to do it as well. Now, there's a couple of catches with it, and this is kind of a cool catch, which I'll get to in another point I make. You can only send secure web pages, so only web pages that are running on HTTPS will work with this. And the URL is limited to 17 characters. So it's like a poor man's Twitter. 17 characters is all you have because of the Bluetooth packet size limitations. So it's not too bad. So if you've got a really long URL, you know, shorten it, or use a shortening version. Use like Bitly or something to shorten the length of your URL if you've got them, one that is too long. So what this article talks about is that when this gentleman goes in to do a talk, he asks everyone to turn their Bluetooth on and the location on their Androids and iOS. Now, it used to be that you had to download an app for it to work, so the physical web app, but that's not so anymore. So Android phones come by default with the ability to detect physical web beacons. The first time it happens, it asks if you want to enable the feature, and then you will be able to sort of view the links. For iOS, you need to add Chrome to your today notifications. So you know when, I'm just picking up my phone now, you know when you swipe down on the top of your iOS device, your iPhone, and you have notifications and today written in there? Well, if you scroll to the bottom of your today, you have an option there, which is an edit option. And then when you have that edit option, you're able to then add different different applications to your today notification. So edit and then add Chrome in there. And the reason you need to do that is because once that's done, then the physical web URLs will pop up as notifications for you on iOS instead of just being able to do it with Android or having to download the app itself. So there you go. That's kind of cool. So you can turn them into receivers. And then as for pushing out the notifications as well, there's a tutorial on how to do it for Mac, how to do it for Windows, and how to do it for Linux as well. So you can set your laptops up to do that. I'll put the article in the show notes itself, which is very, very cool. Definitely go and check that out. And you can also turn your phone into a broadcaster as well, but not iPhones, only Androids. And that will broadcast out a beacon as well. And I just think that's really cool. I think there's a lot of legs in it, and it's a good thing to get into anyway or start trying out. So that's the physical web. The other great story that I saw this week was the fact that... I've got lots of stories in my head. One that I wanted to mention was by Jason Grigsby, but as I was reading my notes, I forgot to actually write that one in. But Jason Grigsby wrote a really good article this week, which is the business case for progressive web apps. And it's basically like, just go and use progressive web apps because they're super awesome. But there's a good business case for it. And excuse my clicking around for a sec, but I'll just pull out one of the stats which he included in there as well. It's basically saying it's a no-brainer. Like, they're not supported everywhere. And we're looking at you, Apple. Like, everyone else is getting on board. Safari, I'm sure, will come eventually. And they have said that they will be part of the next progressive web app thing. But even though they don't support progressive web apps and other the vendors are beginning to, it's not so much about supporting it. Even if it's not supported, it's a progressive web app, as in it's progressive enhancement, as in it doesn't matter if it supports the whole service worker and offline thing. The thing is that it's progressive and it works regardless. Right? It might not work offline, but it works better than it was before. And the example that Jason Grigsby shows is that AliExpress saw an 82% increase in iOS conversions after building the progressive web app, despite the fact that iOS doesn't support progressive web apps. All right, so that's just crazy uptake on it. So there's literally no reason not to follow it and to push on with it. Which brings me back to the other thing, which I do have in my notes, which I think is another great story and a sort of pat in the back for the web and for you all for building awesome web things and doing things in the right way, is that the web has now doubled in the number of HTTPS websites that are being served since last year. So I think that's a really cool thing. And I think it's down to a couple of reasons. So one is that it's a lot cheaper to go with HTTPS now. So when it first came out and it's sort of always been around. When people were trying to be secure and run their sites on HTTPS, you have to buy an SSL certificate. Now, there's no reason why SSL certificates cost money. It doesn't cost people anything to generate them. They really should not have been priced at the point at which they were priced at. It kind of reminds me of when I bought my first .com.au domain, and this company called Melbourne IT charged me like $250 Australian to register this .com.au. And then I went through a different company because they were like one of two companies that would issue domains for Australia. And then when some others were allowed, I bought another .com.au and it was like $20. And I was so furious that they just rinsed me for money because of a demand thing. It wasn't worth that much. They just could charge it because everyone else was charging it. And the same sort of thing happened with SSL. It didn't need to be as expensive as it is, but everyone else was charging that much. There weren't that many providers, so people just charged a lot of money for it. These days, it's a lot cheaper. You can pick them up for a fiver, and you can even go so far as use Let's Encrypt, which offer free SSL certificates. You have to jump through a few hoops on a server configuration to make sure that it continues to request a new certificate every time the old one expires. But if you've got a friend like I do, Bart, who's really good with the back end stuff and is the guy we're doing the other podcast with, then it's super simple to set up. And they actually have some really, really good tutorials on the Let's Encrypt website. So check that out if you're looking for free SSL certificates and you have a little bit of NAS around a command line and server setups as well. So that they've driven the price down as well because you need it for cheaper. The other thing is that large services are now offering HTTPS by default. And when I say that, I mean GitHub pages are now offering HTTPS by default, which I think is fantastic. WordPress is offering HTTPS by default as well. So when you have these large corporations or large providers of websites and website building tools, then if they go to HTTPS, then all of a sudden a whole chunk of the internet can access it as well. There are still some people like Blogger at the moment, which I'm really surprised at, is not HTTPS. So Google aren't sort of stepping up to the plate, I suppose, in that sense, which is a shame. Or at least it used to be the case. Again, I'll do some tapping around to make sure that Blogger hasn't. Blogger's still running on regular. We'll see. I apologize if it's not. Well, their interface is still running on HTTPS, so maybe it's changed. So I apologize. Maybe it has changed. I will check that out. But like I said, the large providers of websites, they're all stepping up to HTTPS as well. Also, services such as Cloudflare. So if you don't have a friend that can install an SSL certificate for you, or you're running your own website and you can't take advantage of GitHub pages or these other large services that are offering HTTPS, then you can use something like Cloudflare. Now, Cloudflare is free to use, and out of the box, it offers you a free SSL. So it runs it in a weird kind of way. So Cloudflare is a CDN, which is a content distribution network. So essentially you have your central website, which lives on your server. And what you do is you tell Cloudflare that it can go to your server and retrieve the website and then serve it from all of the different servers that they have from around the world. So instead of people humming and badgering your server all the time, it goes to all these other lovely CDN spots. It's really cool, makes your site incredibly fast, saves you a whole lot of bandwidth. But because it's serving off all of those others, it can do this sort of faux pas HTTPS, which is great. It's free. It's not the best security, like it won't pass AAA compliance for SSL. But it is a start and it's free and it allows you to do some cool things, which brings me on to the next part. So these services like Cloudflare provide it. Excuse me. But then we've got these carrots that we work towards. And I'm not talking about carrots that rabbits eat or that the reindeer eat at the Christmas time, but the ones that complement the stick. They're all stick and carrot. So it's a reward. So if you're running things like HTTPS, then you can take advantage of some really cool things. One thing is geolocation. Right? So you need to be running HTTPS to be able to find someone's location. That can be super handy sometimes. If you want a faster website, so we talked about using Cloudflare because we want to speed our website up. And by sitting on a CDN, it means that a user in the UK requests your website from a server in the UK. A user in the US requests your website from a server in the US. So it shortens the length of or the distance that your website needs to travel to get to someone's browser. But the other thing it does with HTTPS is if you're running it, then you're allowed to use HTTP 2, which is the faster protocol from the old HTTP 1.1 protocol. Now, again, Cloudflare ships the free version with HTTP 2 support as well. So you get super fast performance with your SSL and your HTTP 2 as well. You also get awesome stuff like, I mean, we talked about progressive web apps. Service workers only work if you're running your site on HTTPS. So the ability to go offline, so present your website to people that don't have an internet connection. Of course, they need to visit your website first when they do have an internet connection. But once they've done that, your website will always be available to them, regardless of how quick their connection is or whether they even have a connection. But that only works if you're running on HTTPS as well. And of course, you need service workers to have awesome progressive web apps. So that's why we want them, or we want to run on it. And finally, also, we talked about the physical web at the beginning. It only works by sharing HTTPS versions of your site. So again, you should just run it. So there are so many good reasons to get your site secure. There's so many free ways of doing it. I'll drop this article into the show notes as well. And that's it for this week. So that were the key things that I really wanted to point out. Really excited. Next week, I'm actually having a chat with a gentleman from Forrester, who is a company that does a whole bunch of research. And his particular area of expertise is around mobile and usability on mobile as well. Now, they recently wrote a book about how mobile e-commerce and the mobile context. Now, I've been writing a little bit about that recently as well, and it's going to be a really good discussion. They're all for the there's a mobile context, and there's only you need to have a different experience for people that are mobile. Now, I'm not sure if they're referring to the device, the context, the verb. But that's what the discussion is going to be. So it's just a chat, but we're going to turn it into a bit of a podcast as well and really get down to the crux of the issues and how we should be moving forward as well. So it'd be good to have a guest back on the show, and I'm really looking forward to that next week. So thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Please rate the show up if you like it. Give us a couple of stars, maybe 5, in whatever podcasting app that you're listening to. If you're not already subscribed, subscribe at responsivedesignweekly.com, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Thanks for checking in. Cheers, guys. Bye.